I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
The doors of the Sistine Chapel close as the conclave begins in the Vatican. We look at the pro-life concerns growing around the world that our next pope will face.
Late abortions nationally are about 1% of all abortions, but in the state of Colorado, it's almost 4% of all abortions.
A hotbed for late-term abortions sees one deadly clinic close its doors. It is one of several across the U.S. shutting down.
And I told her, I help save babies from abortion.
How faith helps bolster those on the front lines of the pro-life fight. Three activists who pray and counsel outside abortion clinics share their stories.
Black smoke billowing from the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican as the first vote in the conclave has been cast by the College of Cardinals. A sea of people watching from St. Peter's Square. Just incredible. The black smoke, which appeared at 3 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. in Rome, signals that no new pope has been chosen. It is white smoke that indicates a new pontiff. We continue EWTN News' coverage of this historic event in our church and in the world. 133 cardinals are taking part, leaning on the Holy Spirit to elect the next leader of our global Catholic Church. In the past five conclaves, it's taken 2 to 3 days before a new pope was named. However, it can take longer. Earlier in the day, the cardinals took part in a holy mass before processing into the Sistine Chapel, singing the Litany of Saints. They also chanted the Veni Creator Spiritus, an ancient hymn that calls upon the Holy Spirit to guide their hearts in selecting a new pope. They then lined up to take a solemn oath of secrecy and fidelity before the doors were closed. While we wait and pray for the cardinals during this process, and experts in the world try to predict who will fill the seat of St. Peter, the mission and work of the church remain the same: to spread the gospel. And that gospel is a gospel of life. Pope Francis was a strong advocate for life during his papacy. He announced the creation of the Dicastery for the Laity, Family, and Life in August of 2016. What this did was combine the work and efforts of several pontifical councils, allowing for a more centralized focus on pastoral care for the laity and family life. It encourages the vocation of the lay faithful in the church and in the world to face the challenges in the world today. The Dicastery also examines ethical concerns in biomedicine and legislation, and of course, promotes the dignity and protection of life in all stages. Francis Meyer, Senior Fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, joins us from Rome to share his expertise on the conclave and the future of defending life in the church. Pope Francis was outspoken about life issues, condemning assisted suicide, likening abortion to the act of a hitman in the mafia. He called for a ban of surrogacy and highlighted the throwaway culture of in vitro fertilization. Fran, quickly, could you weigh in on the former pope's defense of life?
Oh, I think he was extraordinary in that field. I mean, he spoke very frequently about pro-life issues. Of course, the media didn't cover it. But the fact is that in our family, we have three of our grandchildren have disabilities that are fairly serious, and we have a son with Down syndrome, another son who's adopted. And one of the things that really struck me about the way that he led was the tenderness that he showed to the disabled, which I suspect was a subset of his concern for the poor as well. So he really was quite extraordinary, but nobody knows, or not enough people know, if they are simply not told about it. And the mainstream media were terrible in covering that particular issue.
And all of these issues are very big life issues. We're seeing medically assisted suicide being adopted by more and more countries. We're also seeing an alarming prevalence of the abortion pill. How do you think these issues need to be targeted by our next pope? And which of these do you believe is the most imminent?
Well, I think the most imminent depends on the culture and the country that you're talking about. The abortion pill is very prominent here. But so are the other issues that you mentioned. I think the Pope would do very well to emulate what John Paul II did in terms of his first epistle, his first encyclical, which was Redemptor Hominis, which gave a kind of an organic understanding of the dignity of the human person. And then everything that John Paul did after that, every single encyclical was building on that basis. So, and of course, that ended in Evangelium Vitae. But that's my recommendation to the next pope, that he starts with a vision of the theology of the body and who the human person is, that then will lead to an organic kind of development of his thought on these issues.
That's a really strong foundation. And what do you think we need to help support families and the laity as the church moves into this next chapter?
Oh my, I think certainly better catechesis. I think priests should actually be, in a respectful way, more demanding on people to be honest in their faith, because a lot of us live our faith in a lukewarm fashion. It's very easy to be a Christian in America, despite some of the problems we're having now. And I think an honest faith kind of tracks very closely with what Ratzinger said, which is that, you know, it's going to be more difficult to be Christian in the future. And we need to prepare for that now by really making an effort to practice. If we do that, it'll have a natural effect on family life, on the way that we raise our children. Catechesis would certainly help, but I think this is a place where priests can learn, can lead and form their people to be more honest in their faith.
Now, we just wrapped up the Jubilee of Teens. How does the church and the dicastery for the laity, family, and life need to foster young Catholics to face the world's challenges?
Oh, I think one of the wonderful things that's happening, you see this in Christ in the City, that program, and in just endless mission trips that are real mission trips and not just sort of vacations. I think the more that younger people go and see the world and the examples of persecution and poverty, and the work that the church is doing there, it really has a very powerful catechetical effect on them. So if you can't send your children, you know, to Uganda or Rwanda, I really do recommend a program like Christ in the City for young adults and college students, because it's an expression of Christian charity that Pope Francis would certainly have appreciated. And it's also an education in what it really means to be a Christian. And that's an important thing in American culture, because in some ways we're the most materialist culture in history, and it's a constant catechesis and the acquisition of things when the Christian faith is about something entirely different.
Indeed. Fran, thank you so much for joining us today.
I was delighted to be here. Thank you.
EWTN has continuing coverage of the conclave starting at 9 a.m. Rome time, 3 a.m. Eastern. Be sure to tune in for daily live broadcast direct from Rome, diving into every angle of this historic event. Opening St. Mary Major's Holy Door, marking the start of the 2025 Jubilee Holy Year. A Jubilee year is filled with reconciliation, pilgrimages, discussions, and workshops to help Catholics all around the world grow stronger in their vocation and faith. With the recent passing of Pope Francis, the Jubilee celebrations have changed slightly to honor the Holy Father. The Church has already held several Jubilee celebrations at the Vatican, like the Jubilee of the World of Communications, Armed Forces, Police and Security Personnel, Missionaries of Mercy, and many more on the way. The Jubilee of Entrepreneurs provides a platform to business leaders and innovators for reflection, spiritual renewal, and the sharing of ethical practices in business that align with Church teaching.
I opened Choose Life Marketing to reach the abortion-determined woman, the very woman that I was when I sat in that Planned Parenthood lobby.
Business leader Nellie Roach is an entrepreneur who founded Choose Life Marketing. Once an abortion-minded woman, she now runs a full-service marketing agency dedicated to changing and saving lives from abortion. Her company creates and implements strategies to help women seeking an abortion to realize the options they have to choose life. They also serve other advocacy groups around the country to get the pro-life message out, even helping one state win a crucial election against a pro-abortion amendment in 2024.
But Florida is probably the biggest win that we've had. We were so distraught in our agency at Choose Life when we lost Ohio that we were bound and determined to do whatever we could. And it just really stretched our imagination. It stretched our faith in the guidance of God and how our messaging was going to be.
Nellie tells us that in January and February 2025 alone, Choose Life Marketing has reached 48,900 women and helped them call, text, or email a pregnancy center for support. A surprising move by President Trump's Department of Justice, they're asking a federal court to dismiss an abortion pill lawsuit that seeks to improve safety regulations around the deadly drug. The case, filed by attorneys generals of Missouri, Idaho, and Kansas, challenged the Food and Drug Administration's loosening of safety protocols on the drug, including allowing the abortion pill up to 10 weeks of pregnancy instead of 7, removing in-person doctor visits and the availability of the pill online and through the mail. The Trump administration says the states lack standing in the suit because they have no ties to Texas, where the lawsuit was filed. The move has disappointed pro-life activists.
It's so disappointing to see the Trump administration sort of side with the Biden administration here and say, we don't think this should go forward, even though we're making a technical argument about this. There really wasn't a sense that, my gosh, we'd really love to see women better protected here. There was nothing like that at all in this brief.
Several pro-life organizations reacted on social media. Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America posted a statement writing in part that at a minimum, the Trump administration should reverse the Biden's FDA's reckless nationwide mail order abortion drug policy. And Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life, tweeted out in part, we need to be reinstating health and safety standards for these pills, which harm 1 in 9 women who take them and kill babies, not making them more accessible. On Capitol Hill, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri is calling on the Food and Drug Administration commissioner to look into safety concerns of the deadly abortion drug, mifepristone. In a letter to the commissioner, Dr. Marty Makary, Senator Hawley cites a recent study that found nearly 11% of women suffer serious adverse effects from using chemical abortion pills. That rate is 22% higher than the FDA-approved drug label on mifepristone. Hawley is asking the FDA to reinstate safety measures around the abortion pill and evaluate its health impacts. Canadians have elected Liberal Party leader Mark Carney as their new prime minister. The Liberal Party pushes policies that oppose Catholic teaching, including aggressively promoting medical aid in dying, gender ideology, and supporting abortion. While Carney remains publicly committed to his Catholic faith, he has stayed mostly silent on the issue of assisted suicide. He has spoken out in support of the narrative of a, quote, woman's right to choose. Alex Schadenberg, executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, joins us from Ottawa to share his concerns about fighting for life in this new administration in Canada. Alex, you are speaking at the March for Life in Ottawa on Thursday. Abortion is legal throughout pregnancy in Canada. Is there any hope with Prime Minister Carney on moving the needle to support life in Canada, even perhaps family-supported programs?
Well, we can hope there's going to be a change or at least a moderation, but the fact of it is it's the same government. It's the same people elected a different prime minister, but the Liberals do have the government. And it's mainly the same people. So sadly, I think it's the same. It's going to be more years of the same situation.
Medical aid in dying was legalized in Canada in 2016. It is responsible for more than 60,000 deaths since its inception. There is a push to expand accessibility. Can you tell us about that push and your fight against it, and perhaps where Minister Carney stands on the issue?
Well, you're right to say that the government didn't actually say anything during the election about euthanasia-assisted suicide, but that actually was saying that they support what the policy is, because currently the government is scheduled to expand euthanasia in Canada to people with mental illness alone starting on March 17th, 2027. So if they haven't actually stated they're going to reverse course, that means they're continuing with the course. The other thing is they're pushing the narrative of the government is that we should have euthanasia for mature minors, euthanasia by advanced request. They're talking about euthanasia for people with dementia. All these topics are being debated openly, and there's been no comment that, oh, there's going to be a change of direction. So I assume at this moment it's the same direction.
And quickly, is there anything else you want to add or that we should keep our eye on?
Well, the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition is pressuring the government to do a complete review of the law. The original bill that legalized euthanasia required a complete review of the law to start in 2020, and it never happened. They've just never done that. The fact is that recently the United Nations disability arm has said that the Canadian euthanasia law must be changed, that we need to stop doing euthanasia people who are people with disabilities, who aren't dying, who aren't terminally ill. They've urged the government to make a change, and we've been saying you need to do a complete review of this law.
Well, Alex, we'll be keeping you in our prayers.
Thank you so much.
Again, the Ottawa March for Life is Thursday. We'll bring you an exclusive look at the March in Canada next week. Good news in several states across the U.S., the closure of abortion clinics. We start in Utah, where two Planned Parenthood clinics, one in Logan and another in St. George, have shut their doors. They blame the Trump administration's freeze on federal funding. Planned Parenthood of Utah receives $2.8 million in funding through Title X family planning and is the only recipient of that funding. Title X does not cover abortions. There are still six Planned Parenthood centers open in Utah. In Michigan, three Planned Parenthoods have closed in Jackson, Petoskey, and Marquette, and two more consolidated into one in Ann Arbor. They, too, are blaming the freeze on federal funding. Michigan has no gestational limits on abortion. And in Colorado, a late-term abortion doctor is closing his facility after 50 years. Dr. Warren Hearn, who wrote about dismembering babies in his book, Abortion Practice, says a lack of funds and his age, he is 86, are the reasons why he is shutting his door.
Dr. Hearn's cost sheet for abortion was based off of a baby's head circumference, and it went up to over $30,000. That's a grotesque picture of what late-term abortion looks like in the state of Colorado. And he has many proteges that are starting to crop up across the state, including Dr. Benedict Langren, who just recently, in an argument on X, stated that we need to, quote unquote, stop stigmatizing late abortion because many women have abortions in late trimesters for all kinds of reasons, regardless of fetal anomalies or women's health.
Late-term abortions in Colorado account for 4% of abortions. In the rest of the country, they account for about 1% of all abortions. The governor of Colorado recently signed a bill into law that allocates a minimum of $1.5 million annually for state taxpayer-funded abortion.
The fiscal note actually stated quite grotesquely that this is going to be cost positive for the state because of quote unquote averted births, that abortions are cheaper than Medicaid covered births. So the state will actually not lose money when it comes to publicly funded abortion.
The law becomes fully enacted next year. The New York State Assembly passed a Medical Aid in Dying Act several days ago. If passed into law, it would allow mentally competent, terminally ill patients over the age of 18 to self-administer life-ending medication. Timothy Cardinal Dolan is calling the bill a, quote, disaster waiting to happen. In a statement released Tuesday, the Archbishop of the Archdiocese of New York said, for people of faith who believe in the sanctity of life from conception to natural death, the very idea of having a doctor give you a prescription to end your life prematurely is contrary to everything we cherish. The bill next goes to the Senate. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is calling for behavior therapy, not so-called gender-affirming health care, when treating transgender youth. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, the director of the National Institute of Health, said our duty is to protect our nation's children, not expose them to unproven and irreversible medical interventions. We must follow the gold standard of science, not activist agendas, unquote.
In a recently released report, the agency raises concerns about medical interventions such as puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries that attempt to transition children and adolescents away from their biological sex. The report highlights these interventions can carry serious risks of significant harm, including infertility, sexual dysfunction, cardiovascular disease, and many other risks. This report comes in response to an executive order President Trump signed just days into his second term, saying the federal government could not support gender transitions for anyone under the age of 19. Coming up, keeping the faith amid adversity, how some pro-lifers have continued to fight for life outside abortion clinics by trusting God, and how the Sisters of Life honored their founder in New York City. We take you there.
God always remembers our prayers. You know, you don't always see positive things happening in front of you. That doesn't mean positive things aren't happening. You know, we have to just be faithful, you know, be persistent, you know, and God will use his efforts for the greater good.
Behind every abortion clinic that closes, there are often faithful men and women who have been gathering peacefully to pray for an end to abortion. Despite physical and verbal attacks, pro-life advocates continue to be present outside these deadly clinics in an effort to save lives and guide abortion-minded women to choosing life. The ministry is not an easy one, and as we found out at the 40 Days for Life closing rally in Washington, D.C., for many, it is their faith that has helped them continue to fight for life.
I was in a really dark place, to be honest, and I stopped going to Mass, and I stopped praying.
Lauren Handy shares how her faith was shaken after she and other pro-life activists intercepted a box containing 115 aborted children outside an abortion clinic in Washington, D.C. in 2022.
And I couldn't touch church. I couldn't touch religion. It was too painful.
After serving 17 months of a nearly five-year federal prison sentence for a nonviolent rescue at an abortion facility, Handy is now free because of President Trump's pro-life pardons.
And it was by going to prison, by going to the darkest dark place, that I was able to reconnect with my faith, reconnect with the church.
Her time in prison wasn't time lost.
Started going to prison masses, and there was a lot of really great priests who would be coming in, a lot of great volunteers, and my faith really blossomed once again while I was in prison.
She identified a mission gap in the pro-life movement: imprisoned post-abortive women.
There are so many people who have had abortions, who are looking for help, who are looking for healing, who can't see the connections of how their past abortion has led to the drug addictions and the drug selling or the violent crimes that they committed that led them to incarceration, and how it's all connected. And if there's hope and if there's healing, then they deserve that as well.
Handy was able to provide grief counseling to post-abortive women behind bars and be a resource and empathetic ear to these underserved women, allowing her pro-life convictions and faith to strengthen.
100% it has changed my ministry. I don't want to just bully them so they stop doing abortions. I want to give them a landing place for when they change their mind.
Kristen Turner, the D.C. Regional Director of Survivors of the Abortion Holocaust, says her Catholic faith transformed her. After conducting sidewalk counseling for 4 years, Catholicism changed the way she approaches her work.
I would, you know, get in arguments with people on the street, and there was just a lot of anger and hatred in my heart, even though I was fighting for the right people.
Her conversion allowed her to unlock a level of empathy and gentleness that was more effective in changing hearts and minds.
After converting to Catholicism, after spending a year in prayer and contemplation on my own, kind of taking a step back, once I came back, I really feel that it's just been a 180. Praying, being kind to the people out here, and really seeing them move more.
It's probably the important issue in our country right now, and I feel like I have to be doing something to help save lives.
The Catholic faith is what helps a longtime sidewalk counselor, Mike Griven, continue his work, even after suffering an assault several years ago.
It was in 2018. I was chalking out on the sidewalk pro-life messages, and a guy came by and started erasing what I was chalking, and then he eventually stole the bag of chalk I had. And we interacted, and it culminated in him throwing me to the ground and punching me. And honestly, came back the next Saturday, and the great thing was that a lot of my friends showed up and showed solidarity.
Gribben says his faith motivates him to advocate for the unborn. His message to women out there?
You're so valued, and you're valued as a woman, and you're valued in the womb.
May 3rd marked the 25th anniversary of John Cardinal O'Connor's death. As the Archbishop of New York, O'Connor founded the religious order dedicated to protecting and enhancing human life. That order, the Sisters of Life. To honor the life and legacy of their founder, the sisters threw a block party in New York City on a street named in O'Connor's honor. The party was followed by a memorial mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral. Today, the Sisters of Life have nearly 140 women serving across the globe. A beautiful legacy to supporting life. Thank you, John Cardinal O'Connor. And before we let you go, in honor of Mother's Day, we wanted to share some photos of the EWTN Pro-Life Weekly team's mothers, both alive and those who have gone on to their heavenly reward, to thank them for their great love they've given us. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.